Pirkei de Eliezer, Perek Mem Hei. So this perek is going to talk about the Cheder Egel, of the Egel of Zohov, that happened by Matan Torah, by Har Sinai. We'll do probably about half of the perek this week. First, the Midrash gives an interesting introduction to the story of the Cheder Egel, and then it starts talking about the story. So the introduction says like this, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Yaimer. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says, Kishenigla Kodesh Baruch Hu Moshe Mitei Chasna, when Kodesh Baruch Hu revealed himself to Moshe Rabbeinu from within the burning bush, Shlochei L'Mitzrayim, he sent Moshe Rabbeinu to Mitzrayim. Or you could read it like this, Vishlochei L'Mitzrayim, and he revealed himself to Moshe Rabbeinu and he sent him to Mitzrayim. What happened? Omar Moshe Lefnei Kodesh Baruch Hu. There's two ways to read it. Moshe Rabbeinu said in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, he said the following words. He said, Ribbon Kol Olamim, Master of the Universes, Hishovali, swear to me, Shekol Ma She'ani Mevakesh La'aseis Ato Eisa, that everything that I request to do, you're going to do. Make sure, he's asking Hashem to make a swear that whatever Moshe Rabbeinu says should happen, that's going to happen. Shelo Yadaber Lefnei Faroi V'Leisase V'Yargeni, so that it won't happen that I'll speak in front of Pyro, I'll say something, you know, such and such is going to happen, and it won't happen, and Pyro's going to go and kill me because, you know, I'm just saying things. So please, Hashem, you know, swear to me that whatever I say is going to happen, it's going to really happen. Fine. Or whatever I request is going to happen, is going to happen. Vinish baloi, and Hashem swore to him, Shekol mashu mevakesh hu oisa. Hashem swore to Moshe Rabbeinu that whatever Moshe Rabbeinu requests that will happen, hu oisa, Hashem will make it happen. Chutz mishnei dvarim, except for two things. And the Radal says that these two things, it's not pshat that Hashem said except for these two things. Just that when Hashem made this oath, Hashem said except for two things. He didn't say what the two things are, but the Medrash is going to explain what the two things are. So it's except for two things. One of those two things, the Medrash explains, Milikonis baretz umiyayim amavis. Except if Moshe Rabbeinu would request to go into Eretz Yisrael, or to request, so I understand Yom HaMavis means to know what day he's going to die. That's why it's Yom HaMavis.
Question.
Yes, sir.
Didn't he know what day he was going to die when he wrote the Torah?
Didn't he know what day he's going to die when he wrote the
That's
Torah?
That's later.
Interesting. Questions.
Why?
Wouldn't that be later?
No, fine, but he's saying that he's not going to grant that request if he ever wants to know when he's going to die. But why do you think that he knew when he's going to die?
Israel, that would be a later thing.
Because Hashem said, go up the mountain and you'll die there?
Something like that. I'm not sure.
Today you're going to die, necessarily.
From the beginning of Vayelah, when Moshe said, like, I'm not going to go with you any further or something like that? No? Wasn't there something like that?
Okay, it does say in that passage. He says, I'm 120 years old today.
Yeah, this is my 120th birthday, and I won't be going any further.
Here. You're saying it sounds like from the psukim that he did end up knowing what day he was going to die.
Right.
Okay, the Mefarshim say that Yom HaMavis doesn't mean to know what day he's going to die. Yom HaMavis just means the fact that he will die. If Moshe Rabbeinu would request from Hashem, you know, immortality, Hashem won't grant him that.
Question?
Yes, sir.
Did Moshe not learn the first part of Mesilas Yesharim? Why would he not want to die?
What?
Can you be more clear?
Doesn't Mesilas Yesharim say, like, you know, people were created only to, like, you know, something Be'Hashem V'Nena B'Ziv Shechinaso, etc., and other stuff that only happens once you die.
Okay, but Kobe, he wouldn't...
I thought that stuff's going to happen after Techias.
Right, he wouldn't necessarily die, he would just, like, live all the way until Olam Haba would happen. Like, something like that.
So we're going on the day of the Ramban now? About the whole Techias Mesa Matzev?
I guess so.
It could be that Moshe Rabbeinu in this world there was able to get the Ziv Shechin if he had upon him upon Nevuah, no?
That could be also,
yeah. You have to die enough to get there. For a regular person, you have to.
So Hashem promised Moshe Rabbeinu whatever Moshe Rabbeinu wants, he's going to grant him, except for these two things, to go into Eretz Yisrael. And
Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to first get into Eretz Yisrael, then die, to die in Eretz Yisrael, and then Chutz Lachutz. Could be he didn't want to die, but he wanted to die not going to show.
Could be. I mean, you have to know what exactly would the mile be, but.
Oh, because every second that Yid is in Eretz Yisrael, there's another mile.
It could be.
Because that's the chibur of the goof and the neshama.
Right. Nine shenish baloi. How do we know that Hashem swore Moshe Rabbeinu about this? It says the pasuk, "Binishpati ne'um Hashem." I have sworn, is ne'um Hashem, is the word of Hashem. So Hashem said, "I have sworn." Now the problem is this pasuk of "Binishpati ne'um Hashem" is in Bereishis Perek Chav Beis, which is talking about a Kedas Yitzchak. It's not talking about Moshe Rabbeinu being sent to Paro at all. It's talking about a Kedas Yitzchak. So, like, how do we understand it? So the Marzu leaves a tzarich in Godel, why the Medrash over here brings the pasuk of Binishmati Lum Hashem. The Radal wants to say an idea that maybe it means to make a gzer shava, because Moshe Rabbeinu said a lashon of when Hashem was originally sending him to Paro, so Moshe Rabbeinu said a lashon of be adoni shlach na be atishlach. So he said be, and by Avram Avinu, when Hashem swore to Avram Avinu, it said be nishvati l'Om Hashem. So he sort of make a gzer shavu where it says be here, it says be over there. So just like Hashem swore to Avram Avinu, Hashem also swore to Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what the Radal wants to say. Maybe that's the kavan over here. Then the Radal finds another pasuk in Sefer Yeshaya where it says be nishvati. And over there could be the context is talking about a promise that might have been to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he wants to say that change the girsa and say that our Medrash is really bringing a different pasuk that says Binishpati, not the pasuk in the Sefer Bereishis. But Rabbi Yomi Izmir, in the Pirush V'loy Oid Ella, he says another shot. He wants to make a connection between the promise that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Avram Avinu and the promise that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing over here by Moshe Rabbeinu, that he's going to do whatever Moshe Rabbeinu wants, except for these two things. Right? He says, he's understanding, Rabbi Yomi Israel is understanding that the pasuk that we're bringing over here is not a pasuk that's saying that, how do we know that Moshe Rabbeinu, that Hashem swore to Moshe Rabbeinu that he's going to do whatever he wants. Rather, we're bringing a pasuk to tell you, how do we know that Hashem swore he's going to do whatever he wants, except for these two things of Likonis Ba'aretz and Yom HaMoves. And to that, Rabbi Yom Israel explains the connection. He says that Kodesh Baruch Hu gave a promise to Avram Avinu that his descendants are going to be Ka'afar Ha'aretz. They're going to be multiple like the dirt, like the dirt of the ground, right? So numerous. Right? Now, how is it going to be that Klal Yisrael is going to be numerous? If Moshe Rabbeinu would go into Eretz Yisrael and Moshe Rabbeinu would live forever, right? Moshe Rabbeinu would be the one who would end up building the Beit HaMikdash. And I believe, he doesn't say who says this, but I believe I saw it from the Ramami Panu, who says that if Moshe Rabbeinu would build the Beis HaMikdash, it would never be able to be destroyed. Now the problem is, if the Beis HaMikdash would never be able to be destroyed, then if the Jews will in the future do any Averas, so then the punishment won't come to the Beis HaMikdash, right? The punishment will go to the people, and it will destroy the people. And if Hashem destroys the people, then the Shvuah that Hashem gave to Avram Avinu won't be fulfilled, because people, the Jews won't be as numerous as they otherwise would have been. So therefore, in order to fulfill the promise that Hashem gave to Avram Avinu of Bi Nishmati Ne'um Hashem, that's why Hashem didn't let Moshe Rabbeinu go into Eretz Yisrael and or live forever. That's what Rabbi Yomi Israel explains, the connection between these two things. Either Rashi says, there's a parak in Tehillim that talks about the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, and it says Mizmor LaAsaf, Elikim Goyim Boyu Nachlasecha Altivosecha Kachecha, whatever Tehillim Ayin Zayin. Mizmor LaAsaf. So Rashi in Kiddushin says, why does it say Mizmor LaAsaf, a song for Asaf? It's a song of destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. Kino LaAsaf Mi Boyle. It should have said a lamentation for Asaf. Why does it say a song for Asaf? We're talking about the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. So the Medrash that Rashi quotes says, because, no, it's a mizmor, it's a song, because we're happy that Hashem was shafach hamasai, he poured out his wrath upon eitzim v'avonim, on stone, sticks and stones, as opposed to pouring out his wrath on the people themselves. It's a good thing that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in a certain way. So that's sort of bringing out this idea, that if Moshe Rabbeinu would have built the Beis HaMikdash, that we wouldn't have had that. It would have went onto the people, not onto the sticks and stones, and then it wouldn't have been a kiyum of the Shvuah that Hashem gave to Avram Avinu. Al-Kapanim, so we have over here, this is the introduction to the story of the Chet HaEgel, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave a promise to Moshe Rabbeinu that whatever Moshe Rabbeinu wants, Hashem will grant it, except for these two things of going into Eretz Yisrael and Yom HaMavis. Why is this the introduction to the story of the Chet HaEgel? Rabbi Pomerantz? Because we saw in the next parak, in parak Mem Vav, and we'll also see it in the end of this parak, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when Moshe Rabbeinu davens to Hashem that he should forgive Klal Yisrael for doing the Chet HaEgel, so basically Moshe Rabbeinu invokes this Shvuah. He says, you promised that whatever I say you're going to do. So I'm asking you to forgive them, so you have to forgive them. And the Midrash says, yeah, that worked. That was one of the reasons why Hashem forgave the Jews. We saw it last week. And we'll see it again in the next time we meet. There's one more point before we actually start the story of the Chet HaEgel. There's a sefer called Zera Berech from Berachia Shapira from Krakow. It was a Talmud of the Megala Mukais. So the Zera Berech in Parshas Kisiso writes that this Murumas, this Shvua that Hashem gave to Moshe Rabbeinu is Murumas in the Psukim by the Sne. We spoke about the Sne towards the end of Perek Mem, where Hashem revealed his name to Moshe Rabbeinu of Ehiyeh Asher Ehiyeh. I will be that which I will be. So if you look in the Pesukim over there, it says the Lashon of Ehiyeh twice. Besides Ehiyeh Asher Ehiyeh, Hashem also said to Moshe Rabbeinu by the Sinai, he says, Ehiyeh Imach, I'm going to be with you. So the Zera Berech says that when Hashem says Ehiyeh Imach, that's a remez to what over here, what the Pekah de Blizzard says over here, that Hashem made a promise or a swear to Moshe Rabbeinu that he's going to do whatever Moshe Rabbeinu wants. And then when it says later on, Ehiyeh Asher Ehiyeh, so he says Tupshatav, he says either he repeated it again to stress that even if you do an Avera, still once I made the promise I'm going to do whatever you want, doing an Avera afterwards is not going to change that promise, which is very, you know, very interesting in light of what we're saying over here, that even though Klal Yisrael is going to do the Chet HaEgel, but this promise is going to sort of supersede that Avera. Or Hashem repeated Ehiyeh Asher Ehiyeh, even though he already said Ehiyeh Imach, because that's the Lashon of Shvuah, when you repeat yourself. The Gemara in Shvuas and the Aflamid Vav says that if a person says Hain Hain or Loi Loi, that's a Lashon of Shvuah. If you repeat, you say yes, yes, like you try to, you say, you know, can you do such and such for me? So I say yes. So if you say yes, okay, it's time you're saying yes. But if you say yes, yes, that's an expression or a keen way of saying a Shvuah. It's another way of saying a Shvuah, like I promise I'm doing it, if you say it twice, because you're stressing your obligation to do that thing. So when Hashem said Ehiyeh Imach, okay, so he said he's going to do whatever Moshe Rabbeinu wants. Then when he says again, Ehiyeh Asher Ehiyeh, he's stressing that there's a Shvuah behind it. Right, so that's the introduction of the Medrash. Now we'll get to the actual story. Uchashikibu Yisrael said Dibreis, when Bnei Yisrael accepted the Aseret HaDibros, the Ten Commandments, La'achar boim yoim shachachu es eleihem. After 40 days, they forgot their God. They forgot about Hashem. I probably should have read eleihem. Right? After 40, so they got the Luchais on Yud Zayin Tammuz, on Shavuos, and they forgot about Hashem 40 days later, Yud Zayin Tammuz. V'amru la'aron, and they said to Aaron HaKoyin, they said to him, "Hamitzrim hayunaisnes elay heyhem." The Egyptians would carry their god, vahiyum mishavirim umizamim lefanav, and they would sing and they would make music in front of it. V'roinaisay lefnehem, and they would see their god in front of them. So we want to imitate them. Asay lanu elay, I guess elayhim, make for us a god ke elayhem mitzrayim, like the god of the Egyptians. V'niroisay lefanenu, and we'll see it in front of us. Shneimar, it says in the pasuk, "Vayom ruloi." They said to Aaron, "Kum asay lanu elihim, make for us a god." Asher yalchul lefanenu. The end of the pasuk says, "Asher yalchul lefanenu, walk in front of us." We want to be able to like sort of see our god, just like the Egyptians, they carry their god around and they sing and dance, sing and make music or whatever. So we want to be able to do the same thing.
So,
what?
So were they asking for a replacement god, or were they just asking for a visible manifestation of God?
So there's different mahalchim in the Rishonim. If what were they exactly trying to do by the Chet HaEgel? Were they trying to make? Did they deny Hashem, and they were trying to worship a different god? Rav Avram ben Aramam goes like that. Other Rishonim sort of go like that. But the mainstream mahalach is that they were trying to make an intermediary to relate to Hashem. the Kuzri, the Ibn Ezra, the Ramban, other Rishonim, that's considered the more mainstream Mahalach. They were trying to make an intermediary between them and Hashem because they felt that they couldn't relate to Hashem or whatever. They felt that Moshe Rabbeinu was sort of their middleman between them and Hashem. With Moshe Rabbeinu gone, they needed a new middleman. Not that they needed a new Hashem. What does this Medrash mean exactly? It's not so clear. We'll have to see, you know, through the continuation and see exactly what Pirkei Eliezer understood they were trying to do with the Chet HaEgel. The Zera Berech, the sefer that I mentioned before, again in Parshas Kisisa, he brings this Pirkei Eliezer and he says, what's the pshat the Mitzrayim would carry their god or whatever? So he tells you to look at the Sefer Tzioni in Parshas Kisisa. The Sefer Tzioni is also from one of the earlier Rishonim, lived in the 1300s, Be'erach. He wrote a Sefer on Chumash called Sefer Tzioni. So the Sefer Tzioni, in one of the Haggais on the Sefer Tzioni, he writes a whole thing about what's called the Apis Bull. In Egyptian mythology, they had some sort of cow or bull or whatever called Apis. And they it was something that they worshipped, and they would sing and dance and whatever, and make a whole to-do about this Apis Bull. In Egyptology, they know a lot about this. You can look at Wikipedia and find out all kinds of things about this. It's a known thing. So the Sefer Tzioni says that that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to create an imitation of the Apis Bull in the Chet HaEgel. Rav Avram ben Aramim sort of says the same idea. He says that they wanted to imitate the Avodah Zarah of the Egyptians. But he's saying it more specifically that type of Avodah Zarah that we know about, the Apis Bull, that's what they were trying to do.
In Mitzrayim, they worshipped the par or the se? Because we shechted us. Their god.
So the truth is like this. From what we know in Egyptology and everything, like the Egyptians worshipped like almost everything. Like everything had some sort of religious status, some sort of religious significance or whatever. From what we know from Chazal and Rishonim, they more specifically worshipped the bovine, the ovine, and the caprine families. That's the cows, goats, and sheep.
Which is why they were annoyed about cows, goats, and sheep. Specifically, but not anytime any animal gets killed. Like, oh no, you just offended the wombat god.
I mean, we don't. All we know is that it just says that Kitavas Mitzrayim Kol Royet Zayin.
Yeah, but I mean, I would assume that the Mitzrayim ate some sort of meat.
I mean, Ibn Ezra in Parshas Vayigash says that the Egyptians were vegetarians. Maybe Mikates? I guess I don't remember. But there's an Ibn Ezra that says that they were vegetarians. And it could be that it is supported by archaeology, at least to some degree.
Okay.
It could be that only the priests were allowed to eat the sacrificial meats. It's not so clear. Another complicating factor when you try to figure out like the history of Egypt is that the chronology is not so easy to place. And their religious customs evolved over times and switched and changed, and they merged gods and separated gods. Like, it's not so easy to figure out what they did at any specific time. Okay. Holchu, where are we up to? Holchu lahem etzel chaver b'shel Moshe. So now these people, these Jews, it seems that they were Jews that wanted to make the eagle, so they went to Moshe Rabbeinu's colleagues. Aaron v'Chur ben Achesai, his brother Aaron, and Chur ben Achesai, his nephew Chur. Why are they called Moshe Rabbeinu's colleagues? Because in Parak Mem Dalad, we saw, by the war with Amalek, so Moshe Rabbeinu stood in the middle, and Aaron and Chur were standing on his sides. One to the right, one to the left. We'll get to that in a few minutes. One to the right and one to the left. So they were like, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu's sidekicks, so to speak. Right, they were standing to his side, right? So that's why they're called Chaver of Shel Moshe. So Aaron and Chur. Furthermore, it says that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai, so he said, you know, if you have any problems, you speak to Aaron and Chur. So you know, Aaron and Chur were like left in charge. So now, if you look in the Pesukim just mentions somebody named Chur and sort of assume that you know who we're talking about. Chur is just a, you know, he's a guy. Chur, everyone knows Chur, right? But it doesn't say in the Pesukim explicitly who is Chur. So the Medrash over here said the Chur is Ben Achaisai. He's a nephew of Moshe Rabbeinu, the son of Moshe Rabbeinu's sister. So how do we know that? So the Medrash says, "Minayin Shaya Chur Ben Achaisai." How do we know the Chur was the nephew of Moshe Rabbeinu? Shenema, it says the pasuk, "Vatomas Azufa, Vaykach LeChalev Es Efros, Vated LeEschur." Azufa died, and Chalev married someone named Efros, and she gave birth to Chur. The Chazal tell us,
Efros was Azufa's wife.
The Efros. Azuva was a lady, and she died, and she was ostensibly married to Kalev, and then Kalev went and married someone else named Ephras, and then Ephras gave birth to someone named Chur. Yeah. Now Chazal tell us that when Saita, when Megillah, that all these people, Azuva, Ephras, whatever, it's all names for the same person. Azuva is another name for Miriam. Why is she called Azuva? Because when she was younger, she became sick, and nobody wanted to marry her, so she was forsaken. She was Azuva, like they all left her. So Kalev married her, even though she was in that sickly state. Gemara says another name for her was Chala. Chala with a Ches Lamed Aleph Hey, which means like sickly person. That was another name for her. Kalev married her, and then afterward, and they davened to Hashem, whatever, and she got better. And then another name for her is Nara, which literally means a young lady. Right? She became healed and she was rejuvenated to be like a young lady. This pasuk is referring to that. Is referring to that event. But Tamas Azuva, the fact that Miriam was sick and no one wanted to marry her, so that aspect, so to speak, of Miriam died. Kalev es Ephras, and Kalev married Ephras. We're still talking about the same lady. Miriam is Ephras. Ephras is another name for Miriam. Right? Kalev married her. Vatelad le'eschur. And she gave birth to Chur. So who is Chur? Chur is a son of Kalev and Miriam.
What is the aspect of
Ephras?
Ephras. So it has to say that and not the name that we know.
So I'm pretty sure, but I don't remember 100%, but I'm pretty sure that the Gemara says that Ephras is like a lashon of Priya Revia, that she's able to give birth and that to be fruitful and multiply. Mm-hmm. So that's what it is. But the Midrash over here says a different point in the name Ephras. V'lama nikra shma shel Miriam Ephras. Why is Miriam called Ephras? What does Ephras mean? I don't know exactly how the Medrash over here is going to put this back into the word Ephras, but the Medrash understands that Ephras means Bas Platini. Platini or Platini. Platini means a palace, a royal palace. So Bas Platini, the daughter of a royal palace, like a woman of royalty. Bas Melachim, a daughter of kings. Migdali Adar, from the great people of the generation. Gemara says that Amram was from the Gedali Adar. Gemara Sekta says that Amram was Gadol Adar. Shekal Nasi v'Gadol Sh'amad b'Yisrael Nikr Shmai Ephras. Any Nasi, any prince or king or president or Gadol, important person who came up amongst Klal Yisrael, he's called an Ephras. It's an appellation that we apply to all Chashuva people in history. Not all, but through many to many Chashuva people in history.
Irrespective of gender?
So usually it's used to refer to, like, this man is an Ephrasi type person. But like the matriarch of Ephrasis would be Ephras herself, which is Miriam.
Okay.
Let's say it like that. Shenema, it says in the Pasuk, Yeravam ben Nevat Ephrasi. Yeravam ben Nevat, who was an Ephrasi. Gemara, Yeravam ben Nevat was the first king of Malchus Yisrael. Right? He's the one who built the golden calves in Don and in Bereshit in Beis El, but the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that Yeravam ben Nevat was a huge Talmud Chacham. Before he became king, you know, power corrupted him and he lost his focus. But before that, he was a huge Talmud Chacham. He was unparalleled in his generation. So the pasuk calls him an Ephrasi. Malachim Perek Yud Aleph pasuk Chavav. That's in the beginning. You know, he's called an Ephrasi. So he's called an Ephrasi. Now, the problem is that Yeravam ben Nevat was actually from Shevet Ephraim. Now, you could argue that Ephrasi means a person of Shevet Ephraim. It doesn't necessarily mean, you know, royalty or a chash of a person. So how do we know that Ephrasi means royalty or chash of a person? The next pasuk. V'David ben Ish Ephrasi. David, King David, right, was the son of an Ephrasi man. Says the Medrash. V'chi Ephrasi haya? Was David Amalach Ephrasi, meaning from Shevet Ephraim? No, we know he wasn't. V'alde Meshevet Yehuda haya. We know that David Amalach was from Shevet Yehuda. Right? So how could Ephrasi mean from an Ephraimite? Elamai, Ephrasi doesn't mean Ephraimite, it means the chash of a person. Ella, what does it mean? Ephrasi ben Paltining, son of a royal palace, ben Milochim, son of kings, Migdalei Hadar Haya, from the important people of his generation, David Melech was from. And also, okay, there's another aspect you could say that Ephrasi maybe means the name of a city, because Beis Lechem is also called Ephras. I know you think Ephrat is Ephrat and Beis Lechem is Beis Lechem, but in Tanakh, Beis Lechem is also called Ephras. It's the same place.
Well, it's very close.
What?
Very close.
That's what I just said. No. You think that they're two different places,
I thought they were
and they're very close. What?
I thought they were two different places, even in Chumash.
No,
it says Ephrat. Because when Rachel died.
But Rachel died, yes.
Where she died, in.
What?
Hate.
No, Beis Lechem. No,
on the way to Ephrat.
No, that's not the lashon of the pasuk.
It's not.
B'derech Ephras hu Beis Lechem.
Oh yeah.
Ephras is Beis Lechem.
Well, everybody calls Ephrat in the Beit Lechem district. You just now with the Arabs and everything else, two separate places. But it's really in reality, Ephrat is within Beit Lechem.
California is one place. Then there's San Francisco and Los Angeles.
He says they buried you like on the side of the highway or something?
Right.
So where was that highway in Beis Lechem?
Next to Beis Lechem? I don't know. Nowadays, modern Beis Lechem is built around it, right?
Now Ephrat is like right near Beis Lechem?
Well, it's... You know, they did all sorts of things with the roads, you know.
Beis Lechem today is officially New Jerusalem.
I'm not familiar with what was going on, let's say, 50 years ago after the Six-Day War, because Ephrat wasn't founded then, and the road 60 that goes now, Derech Hebron, went a different way, went through Beit Lechem, past Gever Rachel. I mean, I'm not here long enough to know what happened in the 70s to travel, how the roads went, before the tunnels were built and everything. I don't know.
I'll tell you this much. There's a law in this country that you're not allowed to name a city after a biblical city unless you know for sure that it's the same place.
What?
Yes.
That's why they
call
it
Beitar.
Yeah,
Beitar. Beitar is
not a biblical city.
It's not mentioned in Tanakh explicitly.
Just in the Gemara?
And also, Beitar's technical name is Beitar Elite.
Right, and Ephrat's technical name is
Ephrata. Exactly. Ephrat's technical name is Ephrata because they can't name it Ephrat. Now, Ephrata is just a corruption because they don't believe in Chazal, so they don't know that Ephrata means to Ephrat. The Gemara says Ephrata means you put a hey at the end of the at the end of a word when you want to put the lam in the beginning, but they don't believe that. They think Ephrata is a name.
Beitar also wasn't named after the city Beitar. It was named after the organization Beitar.
The football Beitar team.
It was named after the
because there's an Arab town across the road.
Beitar.
There's an organization of the.
And I heard that people say that really Beitar is supposed to pronounce Beitar.
No, there's an organization of Zavatinsky's that he founded that is called Beitar.
Yeah.
So that organization, they built the city, so they named it after themselves. They wanted they want people to come. They didn't want to come, so the Haredim bought it up. It's a whole story. It wasn't supposed to be the Haredi city. It was supposed to be the people of Beitar who wanted their own like city. You know, they also had like a soccer team or whatever.
Yeah.
It's connected with it's a right-wing organization, which is named after... It's a corruption of Brit Yosef Tomfield there, but they turned the Tess into a tough, so it should fit in with the word Beitar. After he, you know, got killed in Tel Chai. So they,
it's like Barnof was originally marketed to the Hillelim. Mike tells me in the late 70s, the Hillelim, Barnof was marketed to the Hillelim, was give out your old bet, but the Hillelim didn't want to go there.
I'm still trying to understand
that. Was marketed to the
Haredim. Ephrat is Yerushalayim,
or not? Was marketed to the Haredim.
I missed
asked, what,
I don't know.
So why is he why is he referred to as a fussy? Who's Rehoboam ben Nebat's father? He was also, his father was also the previous, was
no,
the previous king?
No, he wasn't the king. Nebat wasn't the king.
So then why is he referred to as a fussy? We just proved why it doesn't mean from
no, so fussy means, fussy means like he's a type of person who exudes royalty.
Oh, because he's a top
He is a top hoham. He's like a hush of a person. Yeah, it doesn't literally mean royalty because his father wasn't the king.
Right, and so Satum Miriam is also called the first because she's the boss of the Talmud Chacham.
Right.
Limited Palestinian territory, but it's still part of Yerushalayim. They're called Seder of the
Jews there, right? I do know that the Statue of Liberty is not in New York and New Jersey. That I know. But I don't know about Ephraim and Beit Levi.
Since Chur was from Shevet Yehuda, and he was from the Gedalei Yador, from Choshev, a people of his generation, so his reaction to the people that wanted to build this God that they can sort of tangentially see was Hischel Mechich Yisrael Dvorim Koshim. He began to chastise Bnei Yisrael with harsh words. He gave it to them. They wanted to make a Avodah Zarah, and he screamed at them and he told them off and whatever.
So they bumped him off.
So, one second, before we get to that part. So the Radal points out an interesting idea. We saw in Perek Mem Dalet so that the two people that stood by Moshe Rabbeinu was Chor and Aaron by Muhammad with Amalek. So we brought a Zohar there. The Zohar, the Radal over there in Eis Chaf Aleph. And Perek Mem Dalet said that the Zohar says that Aaron was on Moshe Rabbeinu's right side and Chur was on Moshe Rabbeinu's left side. So the right side is always the side of Rachamim and the left side is always the side of Din or of Koshais. Right? It's Dibor, Dvorim Koshim, Dibor is Kosha, right? Dibor Ishitonu Koshais, that's what the brothers said about Yosef. Dibor is always the lotion of Kasha, strong. So Chur was the left side. He took the strong route, and he spoke strongly. And then they bumped him off, as you said. Right? But Aaron, who was on the right side of Moshe Rabbeinu, is going to take the more Rachamim route. Mm-hmm. He's going to try to appease them and try to calm them down, or whatever, without being so forcefully against the idea. He's going to take a more subtle approach.
I mean, the Zohar is saying that was his personality because that was before Chet Egos. We're saying that he was that type of person, so too in the future he would act that way with Kol Yisrael.
The Zohar just says that Chur was on the left side and Aaron was on the right side. The Radal says based on that you could say that Chur represented Din and Aaron represented Rachamim, and since Chur was Din, he took a very harsher
right.
Approach.
He's just saying that's how he would act, Mamela, because that's how he was.
Right. I guess so. Yeah.
And Aaron couldn't have just said something like, let's sleep on this?
Well,
we did. That's what he was trying to say.
That's what he's going to say, yeah.
Oh, right, but then they didn't.
Chag L'Hashem Mochar.
Right.
Tried to get him to...
So, as Rabbi Hochstad said, the disgraceful people of the Jews, the low-class people, they went and they killed. They got up upon him and they killed him. Oh, one second. We'll get to that question. That's one of the big questions on this parak. But
what did
he
ask?
We'll see. The despicable people got up and they killed Chur. How do we know that the despicable people killed Chur? How do we know that Chur was killed? So Chur is mentioned in two stories in Chumash, and then his name is mentioned. It comes up like in one or two other places, and that's it. The two stories are once is mentioned by the story of the war with Amalek, that he helped hold Moshe Rabbeinu's hands up. And the other story is by Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai, so he sort of left Aaron and Chur in charge. And then the name Chur appears again, Bitzala ben Uri ben Chur, which is not even Muchach that it's the same person, but we're assuming that it is the same person. Right? So Chur is not mentioned. What happened to Chur? If he was such an important leader, he helped Moshe Rabbeinu keep his hands up. He was in charge when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai. So what happened to him? Where did he disappear to? So that's how Chazal understood that he was killed. He was killed off. He disappeared in this story. When Moshe Rabbeinu went up, Chur was already gone. But the Marshan Sanhedrin says this point. The Radal brings the Medrash Tanchuma and Parshas Tetzaveh says this point. I actually
I don't understand the Raya.
Well,
I don't understand.
The riot is that Hur was an important person beforehand, right, no, and then afterwards he's never mentioned in the story right. anymore. So what
we
happened?
We see a similar thing by Bezalel though. Bezalel was also spoken about a lot, and then you don't hear about Bezalel anymore. But that's because he had a certain purpose in the tafkid that he was playing, and we need to speak about him. And after that, we didn't need to speak about him, what he was doing after
that. No, but Bezalel was only I guess you could say Bezalel was only mentioned in a certain context. He was never mentioned for anything besides building the Mishkan. So right. you could say what you're uh-huh. saying. Uh-huh. Here we're saying that he was a leader. He helped Moshe Rabbeinu keep his hands up. He was in charge.
He was killed. Maybe he just like
no that part of how he was killed. What's the whole story? That's a Kabbalah. That's a tradition that Chazal had. But how do we see it in the psukim? Where is there an allusion to the fact that something happened to Hur? Is the fact that he's no longer mentioned in the psukim afterwards?
I hear.
I wrote an interesting point that I came up, I realized once. The name Hur appears 5 times in Chumash, in Sefer Shmos. His name comes up 5 times. Now Rashi does something very interesting. Rashi, in 2 places, Rashi says, "Who is Hur?" He says he was the son of Kalev, and his father was Kalev, and his mother was Miriam. In 2 places, Rashi says who his father and his mother was. In 1 place, Rashi just writes who his mother was, without mentioning who his father was. And in the 5th place, Rashi doesn't say anything.
Four?
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, in 2 places, he says both parents. In 2 places, he says nothing. And 1 place, he says just his mother. Those are the 5 things that Rashi does. So it's like, why did Rashi choose to explain like who his genealogy in 1 place, half of his genealogy in another place, and the other place he doesn't say anything, and it's not like it's in order. It's like, I don't know. I'm not sure why what was driving Rashi exactly, but.
Interesting. So you'd think that once would be enough too.
Yeah, and also could be 2 of them were like not so far apart, a few psukim away from each other. Okay, right there. V'ra Aaron saw l'chur shenarag, he saw the chur was killed. Uvana mizbeach, and Aaron built a mizbeach. Shnemar, it says the pasuk, vayar Aaron saw. Ma ra, what did Aaron see? Shenarag chur ben achisai. He saw that chur, his nephew, was killed. So because he saw that his nephew was killed, he built a mizbeach. Uvana mizbeach. He built a mizbeach. Shnemar, it says the pasuk, vayivan mizbeach. Right, the pasuk, vayar Aaron, vayivan mizbeach. Aaron saw that chur was killed, and he built a mizbeach. Pashtus, you would say that Vayar Aaron even Mizbeach means that he saw that he might meet the same fate, and therefore he was scared, and himself he decided, oh, I have to participate with them, I have to be Mishatef Pula, and then be a participant and follow along with what these guys want to do. Otherwise, they're going to bump me off. They're going to kill me too, right? And to that effect, the Radal says that maybe you could darshan Vayar Aaron as if it said Vayar with 2 yuds, Vayiro Aaron. Mm-hmm. Aaron was scared. But the Radal doesn't like this pshat. He says Chas v'Shalom to say that, no, because he was scared that they're going to kill him, he was going to build a Mizbeach for a Vayar Zohar or whatever. Rather, the Radal says that, no, Vayivan Mizbeach means that he built a Mizbeach for Hashem. It's not he built a Mizbeach for Hashem. It doesn't mean that he built a Mizbeach for a Vayar Zohar.
So then what's the Shaykhis to Hur dying? Who dies and I say I'm going to build a mizbeach.
So I guess he's saying like I have to go do something now. I'm going to do something and these people want something to be built or something to be done. So I'll build a mizbeach. I'll build it for Hashem, but maybe that'll calm them down or something like that.
Interesting. Okay.
The Radal says that Vayar Aaron doesn't mean he literally saw with his eyes. Rather, it means like he saw with his heart that he understood. And the Radal makes an interesting drush over here. He says that Vayar is Gmatria Chur. It's not really. If you take Chur, the Chur is 208 plus 6 is what?
214.
Plus the 3 letters of the word Chur.
You can do that?
Yeah, there's such a Mahalach in Gmatria where you add up the Gmatria of the word and plus how many letters there are, which is how much?
217.
217. Vayira is also Gematria 217.
Without adding up the letters.
Without just the letters, just the Gematria of the word, yeah, without the sum of the letters. Mm-hmm. So it says that there's a remez in the word Vayar Aaron, and Vayar is a remez to Chur. spell Chor? Chor is Ches Vav Resh.
That doesn't make sense. Oh, so you said with one yud. Yeah.
Yeah. Don Aaron din b'nei levin atzvei. Aaron made a calculation between himself. Omar, he said, "Im ani oimer lahem tinuli chesav izav." If I say to them, "Give me gold and silver," miad hem mivim, they'll immediately bring gold and silver and they'll start building some sort of a avodah zarah or whatever. So what am I going to do? Ela harini oimer lahem tinu nizmei nishechem b'neichem b'nei seichem. Rather, I'm going to say to them, "Give me the earrings of your wives and your sons and your daughters, and they will be more those people, the wives and the sons and daughters and the children will be more hesitant to give away their jewelry." And since they're not going to want to do it, so the whole thing, umiyara dover bottle. The whole matter.
It was only the adults.
What?
It was only the adults. The children weren't also saying to like make a vote or something.
That's what it seems. Yeah. So Aaron made a calculation. He cheshbon that if he requests that they give the earrings from the women and the children, so the women and children will be hesitant to give their jewelry, and they won't be likely to do it, and the whole thing will just fall apart. The whole plan won't happen. Shneiros is a pasuk. Aaron said to them, "Pirku lizbeazav asher baaznei neshechem b'neichem uvneisechem." Right? So he said, "Give me the earrings from your wives and from your children." Shamu hanashim, the women heard this, v'loy ratzu, and they did not want to do so. So this is really where I wrote this down. But Rabbi Felder sort of brought up this question. Rashi in Chumash goes with a mahalach that who were the people involved with building the Egel Zav? Just the Erev Rav. So now if we're
the
saying
Erev
over here,
Rav were the only one who wanted. Or
they were the instigators behind the whole thing, and then afterwards they sort of dragged other people along with them when it came to actually worshipping the Eglos. The Erev Rav, L'chor, they were people from Mitzrayim.
You know,
but,
Rashi says about the Mitzrayim, I don't have to mention it.
Yeah. So. So the question is, so who are these wives? These are the wives of everyone. Of all the Jews, or the wives of the Erev Rav, who are these wives that we're going to say that the wives didn't want to give their stuff away? It
could be the wives of the Erev Rav. They're in a higher level, even though they're menos chum.
The wives of the Erev Rav.
Nevertheless,
all the Jews, they didn't want to get involved in the Erev in the whole Egel Azov, at least at this point. Just the Erev Rav, and even the wives of the Erev Rav, they were already on a higher darga, and they didn't want to.
Why are we bringing up the Erev Rav at all? Why are we even bringing up the
Erev Rav? We want to understand Pashup Shat. Right. Who are these guys that are trying to build the Egel Azov that their wives are not going to listen to them?
So couldn't you just say it's the like other it's members of Klal Yisrael and that their wives didn't want to do it, just like how Aaron wanted to happen?
Well, who wants to build it?
Right, so I'm saying without bringing up the Rav, I can't just say the simplest thing, would just to say that it was.
But Rashi and Chumash says from other midrashim
that
it's the Erev Rav.
Their wives means the wives of
their wives of other people.
What?
Is that what you were saying?
No, I was saying what's forcing us to even bring up the Erev Rav right now? I'm saying Rashi. I know that because
Rashi and Chumash says that it was the wives of there. That was Erev Rav that built the Erev Rav. Our question is we see people that want to build the Egel, and we see that their wives aren't interested in it.
Right.
So the question is, are we only talking about the Erev Rav, and these are the wives of the Erev Rav?
Rashi's quoting a Medrash?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Or...
Not this one. Right, no, so my question was, meaning within the text, without bringing up Rashi's...
Right, no, in the text doesn't say anything about Erev Rav. But we know what Rashi says that, when there's other Midrash. Now you could say that it's Machlekes and Midrashim. Those Midrashim that Rashi goes with, and my friend, what's his name? Rabbi Leerfeld, he wanted to say this. A friend of mine, Leerfeld, in the mirror. He wanted to say that it's Machlekes in the Midrashim. Rashi, in all the Midrashim, what's the Mahalach, that it was only the Erev Rav. Our Midrash is going with an idea that, no, everyone wanted to build it, but the wives not.
And that's good. That's what Aaron Cohen wanted to happen.
Yeah.
And then, but then so you could say the next step was, and then the Erev Rav got involved, and they did it anyways, no?
It doesn't mention it. It doesn't say over here Erev Rav when it talks about that they're going to do it anyways.
You could say that.
So then, who did it after the wives didn't want to do it?
It just says Anoshim. We're going to see it. It just says Anoshim.
Even if other people wanted to do it, the Erev Rav convinced them. They didn't want to do it from their own initiative. The people were good. The Erev Rav, they gave drushes about why they have to do the eagles, so they convinced people.
So when did they convince them?
They made a whole propaganda.
You're saying by this point they already convinced them?
Could be that within the few days before this, so that if Moshe doesn't come back, then do the eagles. So they already made a whole campaign amongst Klaus, a whole political campaign.
So I'm saying, so they already convinced the regular Jews?
The low class Jews, you know, the people who didn't have so much.
The low class.
The Bezuyim. So the Erev Rav, they convinced them probably.
Could be.
Were the Erev Rav, Lefi Rashi, were the Erev Rav also the ones who bumped up Hor?
Maybe.
I
seem to remember such a lashon that the Erev Rav killed Chor, but I don't know 100%.
It's with the personalities of Bnei Chum that they're the ones who did it
to kill people. Yeah, it could be.
Like Nimrod and all these people.
So what's the women's reaction? Shomu Hanashim, the women heard this suggestion that they should give their earrings, but Loi Ratzu, they didn't want to do it. The Radal says not only did they not want to give their own jewelry, you know, directly for the egel, but they didn't even want that they should give it to their husbands and their husbands will donate it for the egel. They didn't want to be involved at all. And they didn't accept upon themselves to give their earrings to their husbands, meaning not they didn't want to give it directly to the egel, and they didn't want to give it to their husbands to donate it to the egel. Ella Omru Lahem, rather they said to their husbands, Lasat Shikutz Visayeva She'en B'Koyach Lahatzil Loi Nishma Lachem. They said to their husbands, to make an abomination and a disgusting thing that doesn't have any ability to save people, we're not going to listen to you. Radal says, we're not saying that, oh, they didn't give it because they're attached, the women are attached to their jewelry, and that's why they were hesitant to give it. No, they stood their firm ground and they said, no, we're not giving it because you're doing a disgusting and abominable thing, and that's why we're not giving it to you. Not because, Stami, because we like our jewelry. Aaron HaKohen's cheshbon was that, like, the nature is that, you know, they like their jewelry and they don't want to give it up. But at the end, it's not stam because they like their jewelry. It's because they had a religious conviction that they didn't want to take part in idolatry. And other Rishonim, when they bring down the continuation of this medrash, they point out that we do find that when it comes to building the Mishkan, so the women did donate their jewelry. So you see, it's not because they're attached to their jewelry. They're not so attached because they do give it up for the Mishkan. So it's a religious idea why they didn't want to give their jewelry for the eagle. Not because stam, because they like their jewelry.
Wait, so what was the rav? How are you saying that we know that Aaron HaKohen was originally asking because he thought they were attached to their jewelry? How do we see that?
It doesn't say Beferish in the Medrash, but in the Mefarshim just said that, like, what was Aaron's thought? He says, like, say, bias of love, he says,
uh-huh.
They care about their jewelry. It doesn't say explicitly, you're right, but that's what the Mefarshim seem to be saying. Okay, so the women didn't listen to their husbands, they didn't want to donate their earrings, and because of that, says the Medrash, because of this, Hashem gave to them, to the women, to the Jewish women, their reward in this world. What's their reward in this world? That the women keep Rosh Chodesh more so than the men. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them schar in Olam Haba, shehen asidais lishchadesh k'may roishei chodashim, that the women in the future are going to be rejuvenated like the Rosh Chodesh. Shneim atzaz in the pasuk, hamatzbia batoiv ed yeich, the one who is satisfied for a good reason is satisfied with their ed yeich, with their adornments. The end of the pasuk says, "Tischadish kanesha niuraychi." They will be renewed like an eagle. Their youth, so they're going to be some rejuvenated in their youth. We'll see it way later on. Parak Nun Aleph. What exactly that means? That they're going to be renewed like the Rosh Chodesh. They're going to, like, the fountain of youth or something like that. We'll see exactly what that means in Parak Nun Aleph. But that the women got a schar in Olam Hazeh and in Olam Haba for refusing to take part of the Egel Azov. In Olam Hazeh, they got that they get to keep Rosh Chodesh more than men. We'll have to see exactly what that means, that they keep Rosh Chodesh. We'll have to see what it means, more than men. And on Olam Haba, whatever this means, that they're going to be Nischadish, like an eagle or whatever. We'll see at a different point. Well, the Shaila is, before we get to exactly what it means that they keep Rosh Chodesh more so than the men, what's the Mida Keneged Mida of Rosh Chodesh? What does Rosh Chodesh have to do with not partaking in the Egel Azov? So you didn't give your earring, so therefore you get Rosh Chodesh. Whatever, we'll see what it means, what they get Rosh Chodesh. What does it mean? What's the connection between? So Rabbi Liomi Izmir says two explanations. The first pshat he says is this idea, it's brought down in a few different, I've seen it in a few different places. There's a marsha about this in somewhere, I don't remember where the marsha is. There's a Sefer Ikrim that says this, that different Oivdei Avodah Zarahs, they attributed different types of metals to different celestial bodies. Different types of elements, different celestial bodies. So, for example, gold was associated with the sun, and silver was associated with the moon, etc. Yeah. So, if we go with that idea, so Rabbi Leo Mezer says that gold has to do with the sun, right? So, by these women rejecting the Egel Azov, they're rejecting using the gold for bad.
So they get them.
So they're rejecting. They're rejecting the sun in a way. And the reward for that is they get Rosh Chodesh, which has to do with the moon.
Interesting.
And we've spoken a few times about, obviously, there's a Gemara in Mesachas Brachas that says that there was a guy who had a dream, and in his dream he saw that he touched, it was a guy, he had a dream, and he saw in his dream that he touched the moon. Right? So
He kissed the moon.
Right? So I asked, I forgot who, Abaye maybe. So what does it mean that I saw this in the dream? So he said, what it means is that you're a boil of Bas Yisrael. So what does the moon have to do with the Bas Yisrael? So there's a different, this idea that a moon is like a Jewish woman has to do with the moon. Besula Nisus Leim Haravi is Rosh Tevis Levana. The Kabbalah bring down such an idea. Besula Nisus Leim Haravi is the first mission Ksubis. It says that a virgin woman is supposed to get married on Wednesday. Right, so the Rosh Tevis is Lavana. Just like a Lavana.
You mix them around.
Yeah, you take those letters and you mix them around, yeah, but it's the same letters. So that's the idea, they rejected the gold, they rejected the sun, so therefore they get the moon. That's one pshat Rabbi Leo Me'izrir says. Another pshat he says is like this. Chazal tell us, Gemara in Sanhedrin and Samach Kimmel, that when they wanted to make the Egel Zohav, so they didn't want that to be, you know, to replace Hashem. They wanted it to be in addition to Hashem. Oh, Erech, Chas V'Shalom didn't say Erech, but that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to make an additional God. They were making a shutfus between this Egel Azov and the real one Hashem. And they were making multiple gods. Chazal say, Ela Elohecha Yisrael, these are your gods, Israel. Elohus Harbe Ivulahem. They desired multiple gods. So they were trying to make like a pantheon, right? Now these women, by rejecting the Egel Azov, they were basically saying that no, there's no such thing. You can't have multiple gods on the same level. You have to have one supreme god, one person, one entity that's on top. That you can't share it like that. And in that way, the women that were rejecting the Egel Azov were somewhat mirroring the Taina, the complaint of the Levana. Right? When Hashem originally created the sun and the moon, Ashnei Hama'ayreis HaGadayleis, Hashem originally created the sun and the moon, Ashnei Hama'ayreis HaGadayleim, I don't remember. They were originally the same size, the sun and the moon were originally the same size. And Chazal tells us, the moon complained to the sun, to Hashem, said, "How? Ain Shnei Malachim Shamshem B'Tagar Achad. You can't have two kings using the same crown. You can't have me and the sun you know, be the same size. One of us has to go." Right?
So,
you know, in cowboy talk, this town ain't big enough for the two of us. Right?
Side note: did the moon have a valid complaint? I mean, is that how the Mepharshim learn it?
It could be. Well, in the way the moon did have a valid complaint, But it could be that the moon was complaining in order to advance its own agenda. It wasn't trying to, you know, whatever. But the point is...
It didn't complain to Lishma.
You could say it like that. It didn't complain Lishma. But the point is that that idea of Ein Shnei Melachim Mishtamshe B'Tagar Echad, two kings can't use the same crown, that's the same thing that these women were saying when they rejected the eagle. They're saying, no, two kings, you can't have multiple gods. You can only have one god. You can't have an eagle and Hashem. And forget about the eagle. Just go with Hashem. It's the same thing that the moon said to the sun. And the moon was punished for using that expression.
If the moon would have remained silent, what would have happened?
I don't know.
If you would have just accepted Kabbalah, so okay, two crowns, no problem.
Yeah, I don't know.
It would have been light all day and night.
Could be.
Why, how would I sleep in it?
You'd be used to it.
I would.
But the moon said this idea for, you know, in a sinful way, to advance its own agenda or whatever, so it got punished. But these women that said it for L'Shem Shemayim, so their reward is that they get the moon. That's why they get Rosh Chodesh. Because the moon who messed up by saying this, by using this idea, they said the idea not messing up, but in a good way, so they get the moon that lost it.
They get the thing that's messed up.
No, they get the thing they use the same expression in a messed up way.
But the moon got messed up because of it.
Yeah.
So they get the messed
because
up
they
thing.
Because the moon
should
says
it, shouldn't they get the sun for that? I mean, the sun is the one which, I mean, you know, the moon is, if you're going like this, it's more like the Egel HaZahav that, you know.
Yeah, the sun came out on top.
Yeah.
So they should get as a reward the sun rather than the moon.
It means coming from the same kind, just in a different way, right?
No, because the reward is, they're saying the same thing. They're like the moon, but what the moon did for bad, they're doing for good.
It's like if a person kills someone.
You could say in a way, I mean, I'm not saying exactly that. That's the way he says it. But you could say like they were sort of, to some degree, misakin the chait of the moon.
It's like if a person kills someone. If he kills a person who's from Amalek, he's kind of mitzvah, second dies. If he kills another yid, then he has to, he's chayim mitzvah, does the same act, he's cutting off someone's head.
Right.
The question is it a mitzvah of
his? Is it a mitzvah of there? See, he missed the answer. He didn't really care what the answer was.
Yeah.
Al-Kapano.
He's getting into it.
Exactly. Well, Rabbi Pomerantz, what are you saying?
We see that the Amamim are connected to the sun.
Yeah.
Koyach, the power. You can't look at the sun, it's too bright, but it gives life to everything. The Am Yisrael is connected to the moon. We derive our power from the moon.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, and yet we are really the strong ones. We are really the people who Hashem loves. But shouldn't we be connected to the sun and the Amamim connected to the moon? So you see, it's not always the case that the strong ones are... get the sun and the weak ones get the moon.
So we sort of came out with a different way of saying it. We could say that the phrase that the moon used for bad, right, they used it for good. So they mimicked the moon, they're connected to the moon by mimicking the moon, by using the same logic, but what the moon used for bad, they used for good. So their reward is that they were sort of misaking what the logic of the moon, so they get the moon. That's the reward. It's a similar idea. Okay, so what's this idea that the women are shomer Rosh Chodesh more so than the men? So it's like this. Yerushalmi in Maseches Pesachim in Perek Dalet, and also the first Perek in Tainus, in Yerushalmi it says, Nashi dinehigi delele mevet avidata bereish yarcha. Women have a minug not to do malacha, not to do avodah on Rosh Chodesh. That's what's brought down in the Yerushalmi. Rashi in Maseches Megillah brings it down on the Afchav Beis. Rashi brings down this minhag that women don't do malacha on Rosh Chodesh. Also the Rosh over there. And they say that the source for that minhag is this Medrash over here. Our Medrash says that the women keep Rosh Chodesh more so than the men because they didn't participate in the Egel Azov. So Rashi says that that's the source for the minhag that women don't do malacha on Rosh Chodesh. What does it mean that women don't do walk on Rish Chodesh?
So what was this Medrash referring to?
What?
So what was this Medrash referring to? If they get the no malacha thing from the Medrash, then...
Yeah.
When he wrote this, they were still doing malacha on Rosh Chodesh, no?
What? When who wrote what?
When this Medrash was written...
Yeah.
They were still doing malacha on Rosh Chodesh. Then they saw the Medrash and they stopped, no? Or you're saying this is just how we know that there is such a minhag?
Which came first, the medrash or the women? Did the women not do work on Rosh Hashanah because of the medrash, or did the medrash describe what the women do?
The Yerushalmi says that there is such a minhag. Rashi is saying, where does the minhag come? Like, where does this whole idea come from, whatever? So he points to the medrash. I'm not sure what you're asking.
I'm asking, is the medrash just a minhag or a siba?
It's the siba. Meaning, from the medrash onwards, meaning from the time that this happens,
right,
not from the time the medrash is written, meaning from the time the events happened, then women started keeping Rosh Chodesh.
Right.
In Achinami, the medrash might have been written down much later.
Yeah.
At that point, they're already keeping this minhag, but that's what he's saying.
Okay, so there's a minhag that women don't do malacha on Rosh Chodesh, based on this Pirkei d'Rabbeinu. The tour in Hilchos Rosh Chodesh in Aruch Chaim Siman Tov Yud Zayin brings down this medrash, and he brings down the minhag that women don't do malacha on Rosh Chodesh. Interestingly, afterwards, the tour brings down another vart, a similar idea from his brother. The Rosh, who was the father of the tour, had another son, Rabbi Yehuda ben Arash. So he was older than the Torah, I believe. So the Torah brings in the name of his brother, Rabbi Yehuda, different part. He says that the Gimel Regalim, the three holidays, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, are connected the three Avos. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Avram is connected Pesach, because he said to the Malachim, Lushi, Vasi, Ugois. Yitzchak is connected Shavuot, because Yitzchak was, there was a ram by Kedas Yitzchak, and by Matan Torah, which was Shavuot, there was a Kol HaShofar. Right? And Yaakovina is connected to Sukkot, because when it says Yaakovina went to a place called Sukkot and he built Sukkot for his animals, etc. And then the Rosh Chodesh was connected to the Yud Beis Shvatim, the 12 tribes. Right? Because there's 12 Rosh Chodeshim in a year, in a non-leap year. And there's 12 sons of Yaakov Avinu. So the 12 tribes are connected to the 12 Rosh Chodeshim.
Who gets Rosh Hashanah?
Who gets Rosh Hashanah? It could be it's Machlekes Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Shula, B'Tishrei Nivra Olam or B'Nisan Nivra Olam. And it's also Machlekes amongst the Mekubalim exactly how to count how the 12 months correspond to the 12
seems
tribes.
Like we pass in that Tishrei because we mention in the Zostichilas Masechel B'Hashon, Tifil Zoshon, no? So,
yeah, Pashas we pass in the B'Nisan Nivra Olam.
We don't make Rosh Hashanah the Nisan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we'd have to spend Aleph and Beis Nissan saying Yotzus and Masana
Turkey. And, I mean, what was it? When they say Nivra Ha'olam, they're referring to which day?
You don't make a whole Shoshana from
Well, yes.
It's only Rosh Hashanah from Lochem, but not from
which day of the Sheshes Yemei
creation? No, the day of the Adam Rishon was created.
It
wasn't
ah. Yeah. Or
we spoke about that, like, Eric. Yud
Aleph.
Eric Ches? Was it
Shmita?
Yeah,
Yom Rishon was Yom Kippur. Well, we spoke also came up a little bit last week when we said that Yom Rishon of Bris Olam is the same day of the week as Yom Kippur. That's why Vayar Vayibayker Yom Echad, the Medrash says, is talking about Yom Kippur. Well, we spoke about that last week. I don't want to get back into
that. He gets the longest tefillahs, the most best chazanis, best participation. I'm sure they're all jealous of them.
Yeah.
Which are the Yom Tov has such a beautiful tefillah.
So Al-Kupanim, so Rabbi Yehuda, the brother of the Torah, says that the 12 Rosh Chodeshim are connected, the 12 Shvatim. And then when Klal Yisrael did the Cheda Egel, so it says that Hashem Rosh Chodesh from the 12 Shvatim, and women who didn't participate in the Cheda Egel, so they got Rosh Chodesh. This is a similar idea to our Medrash over here. Okay, so my answer is like this. The Shulchan Aruch in Siman Tov Yud Zayin, Hilchos Rosh Chodesh brings down, there's a minhag that women don't do malacha on Rosh Chodesh, and he says it's a minhag taiv. That's what Shulchan Aruch says. It brings down, it's a minhag taiv.
It's only a minhag and not a halacha?
One sec, we'll get to what does the Shulchan Aruch mean when he says it's a minhag taiv? So the Biur HaHalacha, written by the Mishnah Berurah, he writes his Mesupik, what does the Mechaber mean when he says minhag taiv? Does minhag taiv mean that it's a good minhag? If you have such a minhag, so it's good to keep that minhag. You don't have to like get rid of that minhag. It's a good minhag. Or does he mean that it's such a good minhag that even if you don't have this minhag, your mother didn't do it or whatever, you should do it? Does he mean to say you should do it? Or he's saying that if you have the minhag, it's a good minhag, you should keep doing it? Mishnah Berurah says he's mesupik. What does the Mechaber mean exactly? I said the Ramah writes, another Nekudah, the Ramah says that if you have a minhag that you do certain malachas and you don't do other malachas, so that's also good, because you go with whatever the minhag is. It's like the Ramah understood that it just has to do with minhags. Like if you're a woman, your mother didn't do it or whatever, so then you don't have to keep this minhag. At least that's what it seems that the Ramah holds. That it has to do just if you have the minhag. If you don't have the minhag, you don't have to do the minhag. The levush. Okay, Rishlam Zalman Orbach in Halicha Shlema says that some people have a minhag that even unmarried women do it. The levush says that when he asked the question, no, if this is true, that there's such a minhag, whatever, there's such an Indian, so how come the Torah didn't say it's usher for women to do malach on Rosh Chodesh? Why is it, you know, it's a minhag? Why did the Torah leave it as a minhag? Why didn't we say it's usher? So he says, because no, the Torah didn't want to ask their malach on Rosh Chodesh to women, because since women are meshubah to their husbands, so the Torah didn't want to like interfere with that dynamic. Similar to what the Rishonim say about mitzvahs esei shazman groma, the Torah didn't obligate women in such a thing because they're meshubah to their husbands. So then you have like Rosh Shlomo Zalman saying that, you know, could be unmarried women also have this minig. So like lefi levush, you have to know that you have that kasha again. So then why isn't it only a minig? Why isn't the Torah saying beferish? But the Bais of the Aruch HaShulchan says that women that are working, and if they don't work on Rosh Chodesh, so then they're going to lose their panasa. So he says that they're allowed to work on Rosh Chodesh because they didn't accept upon themselves this minig in a situation where they're going to lose their panasa.
So work here does not mean
Lavush also discusses that. Does malacha mean just like, you know, sewing? Sewing is considered a malacha, but you know, I could be sewing just a button on a pants, or I could be sewing like I'm a professional seamstress, right? So Lavush wanted to say that if you're doing it in a professional way, it could be that's a problem. But if you're doing a malacha in a non-professional way, it could be that's not a problem. There's different malgim in different places say different nukudas. But there's one idea over here that I just wanted to point out. The Ar Medrash says that the women keep Rosh Chodesh more so than the men. So what does it mean? What's the more?
Yeah, so what are we doing?
So the Levush writes that malacha kvei... So the Levush writes that a malacha kveda, heavy work, is also even for men. I don't think we pass. I know I didn't see the place that they bring down this Levush. But if you learn like that Levush, that
kveda
heavy malacha is
kveda literally.
Yeah, I guess so. Like the real heavy duty work. I don't know. So that's he says that that's also for men. So it could be that if you learn like that Levush, that's what the Medrash means. Like, women, even light malacha is aser.
Right.
For men, because and they're aser more than men. For men, only a heavy malacha is aser. But it doesn't read so well, because like lemaisa, we don't really pass it like that. We do even heavy work on Rosh Chodesh. So. Yeah.
But not according to the Levush.
Not according to the Levush, but.
So it all works with the Shita, so.
Yeah. Okay, let's let that, what time is it? You know, who has the time?
9:30.
It's 9:34. That's what I have. So we should stop here then. It's already an hour
and 15
minutes.
I just want to ask. Yeah. Before we figure out who is actually giving the jewelry, I'm saying, isn't it, before you said you're in the shame your friend, that maybe it's a machlokas medroshim, but I don't know, it seems like, couldn't we just say that we see from here that the women rejected it? So then if you say that who was that talking about at that point, that was talking about all the Klal Yisrael, the women of Klal Yisrael, not just the Erev Rav, the all Klal Yisrael, they rejected it. So then who ended up giving it? Since the actual Jewish women rejected it, who ended up giving it? It was the Erev Rav, or the wives of the Erev Rav.
Originally, who was asking for it? Everyone?
Everyone. Klal Yisrael. The Jewish women who were getting rewarded with Rosh Chodesh, they were the ones that didn't want to do it. So who ended up giving it? I don't know because we never said the husbands then went and forced it out of their hands.
Okay, you're saying somewhat of a chiddush. You're saying that originally everyone wanted to build it and build the Egel Zav, and then when the women rejected it, so then the Jewish men also sort of rejected it.
Well, that was,
and then the Erev Rav themselves built it, and then they grabbed everyone else with them afterwards.
That's not such a chiddush because that was Aaron's plan all along.
Right, that's exactly what he wanted. So then the non-righteous women, aka the Arab women of the Arab Rav, are the ones that ended up giving.
The thing is, we didn't really see that part yet. We'll probably see it next. I guess we'll see it next time. The Medrash here doesn't say anything about Arab Rav. So the question is how to fit in the whole thing of Arab Rav into
our Medrash. The alternative to say that then the Jewish men then forced it out of their hands then and gave it.
Of whose hands?
Of the women who didn't want.
We're going to see the men also had their own earrings and stuff, but.
And then if you'd say that it was whole time speaking on the Arab Rav, so really the Jewish women were not rewarded, it's really the Arab Rav women that are rewarded.
That's why it's like a little bit difficult to say.
They're the ones that were asked and the ones getting rewarded. Instead of the Jewish one ripping it out of their hands anyways, it was the Arab Rav women that ended up giving it.
Then we have the question of why should Am Yisrael be at fault? If they didn't do anything with the Eruv Rav, why shouldn't it just be the Eruv Rav?
No, because afterwards they for sure joined in.
Smitten. So they rejected it,
yeah.
And then the Eruv Rav continued it, and then the rest of them joined in again.
We'll have to see a little bit weiter. All right.
Yeah.
Good Yantar. Good Yantar.